This is Sid Roth saying, I have a vision. Now is the set time to blow the trumpet in Zion.
Blow a trumpet in Zion, sound it on the mountain. Blow a trumpet in Zion, for the day of the Lord is come.
Shalom, Mishpocha. Shalom, family. Mishpocha is a Hebrew word. It means family, and we're the Mishpocha, the family with the Jewish hearts, made up of Jewish and non-Jewish people that are one new man in Messiah Yeshua, Messiah Jesus, getting ready, Mishpocha, to blow the grandest shofar, or the grandest trumpet in Zion. We want everyone everywhere to hear the good news. We want everyone everywhere to be red hot for the Messiah. My guest is Charles Karin. I'm speaking to him at his home in Boynton Beach, Florida. And he was in ministry for 27 years before he had a power encounter. He came from a very good, rigid Baptist background, but everything he had been taught just about on the power of God was just theory. It was just head knowledge, and all of a sudden it became reality, and almost immediately he started seeing people, even his own church, set free from addictions like alcoholism, people, homosexuals being set free, drug addicts being set free, people healed all over the place, and what he read about was starting to happen in his life. But Charles, you have had people like atheistic, I was reading about an atheistic college professor that you decided to witness to, but you certainly didn't approach it from a strong intellectual persuasion. What did you do?
Well, Sid, I'll tell you about that. It's beautiful, and it's also funny. This gentleman and I had met prior to this worship service that he attended with another mutual friend. He was not a believer. He was an atheist and told me so. He said, I've read everything Karl Marx ever wrote. And that's volumes. And he taught philosophy. He was a PhD. But he came to the meeting. And it was one of those wonderful, wonderful meetings where the power of God was just laying people out right and left. And people were getting filled with the Holy Spirit, and people were getting delivered, and people were getting healed, and I saved him for last. And he was standing, and I went to him, and I said, you are a philosopher, teach philosophy. Yes. And I said, well, that means, in Greek, philo, lover, and sophia, wisdom. I said, that means you're a lover of wisdom. And he said, yes, I love wisdom. And I said, well, then that also would mean that if God is real, you want to know it. And he said in kind of a mocking way, he said, yes, if God is real, I want to know it. And I said, well, can you say that? God, if you're real, show me. And he said, yes, I can say that. And I said, well, say it. And he said, God, if you're real, show me. And I told him, I said, just wait right here. I left him for a few minutes, went ahead, ministered, prayed, laid hands on some others, came back to him, and said, with God as my witness, all I did was touch that man with the tip of my finger, and bang, down he went to the floor, grabbing at the air. And he was on the floor a good long while, with tears just streaming out of his eyes and onto the carpet. And I went off and ministered with others, and I'd come back to check on him, and he was obviously in good hands. And then he disappeared, and I lost him, and I wanted him to come up and share a word with the congregation. And so I spotted him at the far end of the building, and I called him up. I said, come up. And I told the congregation who he was and what he was about being an atheistic philosophy professor. And they were all cheering and praising God because they had seen him on the floor under the power of God. And so I when he came up, I said, tell us what happened. And I handed him the mic. Now, I said, these are his words, no editing on my part at all. He took the mic and he said, I found God. I found God. And broke down. And then he turned to leave me. And I said, wait a moment. He turned back. I touched him again, and down he went again, just crashed. to the floor again, grabbing for the air. Well, he was on the floor a long time. And this time when he left, I didn't see him. And I was on a Sunday night. I was leaving to go to another city the next day for another meeting. Well, on Tuesday, our mutual friend called me and said, I think you should know what the follow-up of that was. Said he had ridden to church with me and left his car at my house. Said when we got back to my house, he was so drunk in the spirit, he could not drive home. And then, one more thing, and then the next day he went back to the church, got the tape, the recording of the service that night, listened to it, and fell out again.
I'm sure that you have many non-spirit-filled pastors that try to disprove the power of God and the baptism of the Holy Spirit that you speak of. The things like that ever happen to people that are so strongly against what doing?
Yes. I say this now with all love because I love all Christians and Jews and everybody. I don't have any rocks to throw at anyone. But I had a Lutheran pastor once who got very upset when he found out his members were attending our meetings and getting filled with the Holy Spirit and were falling out on the floor. That seems to be the biggest scare that people get. At any rate, he told them, I'll prove to you that's fake. I'll go. Well, he did. He was sitting in the rear of the building that night. I didn't know who the brother was. He did not have on a clerical collar. But when I got through with the teaching and gave the opportunity for people to come forward, he was the first one down the aisle and said, I don't know that I ever even touched the dear man. I don't actually remember. He got slammed to the floor like you had hit him with an ironing board. Well, when he went down, all the Lutherans came up. I don't know where he is today. I don't know what happened to him, but I do know of another Lutheran pastor who got filled with the Holy Spirit in my office and for 45 minutes sat in the chair and laughed nonstop so hard from the pure joy of the Lord and kicking the floor while he was laughing. 45 minutes.
Charles, you one encounter at power encounter after another, people being healed, set free, schizophrenics set free, homosexuals set free, drug addicts, alcoholics, people being physically healed in the most marvelous fashion. It seems as though when you lay hands on someone or pray for someone, there is a power transfer, if you will. And that doesn't happen with a lot of spirit-filled Christians. You have an interesting explanation in your book about the laying on of hands. Would you explain that?
Yes, I'll do my best. First of all, Sid, God knows. I know that of myself, I am nothing. There's nothing special or unusual or unique about me. Nothing at all. Nothing at all. I can say with Paul, I am less than the least of all saints. But some years back, I was reading about the death of Jesus and the rending of the temple veil when he died. And I knew that the veil being torn meant that never again would God accept the blood of bulls and goats for a sacrifice. And I read that this particular time, and the Holy Spirit said, read it again. And I did. And I knew there was something special that he wanted me to say, and I didn't get it. Read it again. I did. Read it again. Then it dawned on me. There was something there he wanted me to see. That the rending, and this is, I preach this, but not as a doctrine, and I don't give it to your audience as a doctrine. The rending of the temple veil was a declaration that the Shekinah glory on the inside of the Holy of Holies was now released to come into the holy place and the outer court. Now, where that has significance to us is we are a tabernacle or a temple. We have a Holy of Holies, which is our spirit. We have a holy place, which is our soul. We have an outer court, which is our body. I'm convinced that the rending of the temple veil in typology has a message that the Holy Spirit, through a death experience and the death of ego and the death of pride and the death of the self-centered man or woman, that the Holy Spirit is released through the rending of that veil to the outer court of the body. And that in the laying on of hands, when the Holy Spirit is actually there, that a ministering temple touching a receiving temple, one person to another, that there will be a transference of the power of the Spirit from one believer to the other. I believe that.
I believe this too, and you explain this brilliantly in your book, and you explain the history of the gifts of the Spirit from the Bible to church history. But the power that we're talking about, we need this power. We're in gospel-hardened America.
Absolutely.
And it can't just be the superstars, the media people. We've got to have people that move in this power in every church in America.
Absolutely.
Is that one of the reasons you wrote your book, The Edge of Glory?
Correct. Because this is a power intended for all believers everywhere. It is not something intended for the superstars. Can I share something real quickly with you?
Please.
People get very upset because of the radical nature of the demonstration of the Holy Spirit. And I grant that it is radical. But hear this. I believe that the extent of the Holy Spirit's radical manifestation is to parallel the extent of the church's radical unbelief.
Mm. Well, boy, we need it more radical then.
And I tell you, what I believe the Holy Spirit's going to do, he's going to become more radical. Sid, I was in a meeting the other day at a wonderful church, and there were four dear, precious brothers from another denomination whose denomination does not believe in the manifestation of the Holy Spirit, and two of them were pastors. I did not go to them and ask them if I could lay hands on them. I didn't. I went to a man behind them. Standing, they were standing in the congregation. Laid hands on this dear brother. I'm not exaggerating. He hit the floor stiff as an ironing board. His hands, arms, feet at his side, stiff and rigid. And Sid, he actually came down the aisle vibrating and moved from where he was all the way down the aisle, turned the corner in front of these four brothers, these four dear believers, pastors, and kept on going. And his body was absolutely stiff and straight as an ironing board. There is no way anybody could make that happen to themselves. Absolutely impossible. But here's the point. Radical, yes. But I believe God's going to get more radical. I believe we're going to see non-believing churches and ministries, big time television ministries, suddenly get invaded by the power of God. You're going to have a tough time explaining what's happened, but it's going to happen.
You know, just last month, there was a meeting out at CBN, and Pat Robertson was speaking, and I wasn't there, but I was told that he could not speak. This is a man that's a professional speaker on media, and he was so overcome with the Spirit of God. Is that the type of thing you're talking about?
I believe that, yes, definitely, and I believe the other radical manifestations will occur. Let me also tell you, R.T. Kendall, who has just resigned as pastor of Westminster Chapel in London, I preached there several times, and R.T. and I are now traveling with Jack Taylor around the U.S. and Europe places, holding conferences. R.T. had that to happen to him at Toronto Airport Fellowship.
Oh, we're out of time. Mishpocha, you need his book, The Edge of Glory, Receiving the Power. I want you to call or write today, $15, postage paid.
If you would like to receive a complimentary copy of our bi-monthly teaching newsletter, cassette catalog, or information about becoming Mishpocha, write to me, Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. Or call our order-only line, 1-800-548-1918. To place a credit card order, call anytime, 1-800-548-1918. For all other calls, the number is 912-265-2500. That's 912-265-2500. For a cassette tape of this week's broadcast, send $5 to Sid Roth, Post Office Box 1918, Brunswick, Georgia, 31521. Look us up on the web, www.sidroth.org. That's www.sidroth.org.